Now, interestingly enough, here's a little simple story. Schultz said, "Now, Mr. Earle, now that I'm teaching you how to set goals," he said, "just as a favor to me," he said, "here's a pretty good goal I think you ought to put on your first list." He said, "Why don't you put on your list to become a millionaire?" He said, "Hey, it's got a nice ring to it. Enough zeros to impress any accountant. A millionaire." He said, "I'm here to help you." And he said, "Here's why I think you ought to put on your list goal to become a millionaire." He said, "Here's why." And I thought, well, he doesn't need to teach me why. I thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have $1 million? He said, "No, then you'll miss it." He said, "Here's why. For what it will make of you to achieve it." And I'll give you time to jot that down because it's one of the best I've got for the whole day. Schultz said, "Set a goal to become a millionaire for what it will make of you to achieve it." Once that refinement of philosophy burst on my consciousness, it changed my whole life. Then Schultz said, "Once you've become a millionaire now, what's important is not the money. You could give that away." Now, I had a lot more to learn there, too. He said, "No, you could just give it away." Now, I did better than that. I lost it all. By the time I was 31, I was a millionaire. By the time I'm 33, I'm broke. I go into more details now in the next seminar on financial independence. Some foolish things I did, I'm telling you. Farm boy from Idaho, I went crazy with that first money. I used to say, "How many colors does it come in? I'll buy them all." Foolish. And some bad business judgments. I'll tell you more about that on financial independence. But I lost it all. But guess what? Schultz was right. Here's what he said. Why? If you become a millionaire, you could give away the money because he said, here's what's important. What's important is not the money. He said, what's important is the person you have become. To be worth $1 million. The skills you've learned. What you now know about the marketplace and people. What you know now about decision making. What you know now about economics, personality. What you know now about the move of the marketplace and the economy. What you know. What you know now, Mr. Rona, is what's so valuable. The person you've become, that's what's valuable. What's valuable in life is not what you get. What's valuable in life is what you become. The major question to ask on the job is not, what am I getting here? The major question to ask on the job is, what am I becoming here? Because the value to yourself and to your family is not what you possess. The value is what you become. But now here's the key on setting goals in personal development. Here it is. For your notes, set the kind of goals that will make something of you to achieve them. Set the kind of goals that will make something of you to achieve them. Set the kind of goals that will make you reach, make you stretch, make you read, make you change, make you grow. In leadership training we teach, don't join an easy crowd, you won't grow. Go where the expectations are high. Go where the pressure's on. Go where the push is on. Make you scramble, make you change, get up early, stay up late, pour it on, read the books, challenge yourself, learn the skills. So set the kind of goals that'll make something of you. Now this also comes in two parts. Here's the first one. Don't set them too low. Not too low. So you don't have to read, don't have to change, don't have to stretch. The guy says, well, I don't need much. Well, then you don't need to become much. Now, here's the second part. Don't sell out for something you think you want. Don't sell out your virtue and your value. That would be a mistake. One ancient script says, what if you went for the whole world and lost your soul? Would that be a valuable trade? And the answer is no. It's called disaster of the worst kind. Sell out your soul, even if you got the whole world, what a disastrous trade that would be. Don't sell out. There's an ancient story that says Judas got the money. 30 pieces of silver in those days was a sizable fortune. Somebody says, well, that's a success story, sizable fortune. No, you don't understand. His name was Judas. It was not a success story. The money was, yes. The traitor Judas got the money. Doesn't that change the story? Of course. Interestingly enough, after Judas has his fortune in his hot little hand, he's unhappy. Somebody says, well, how could you be unhappy if you had a fortune? Well, he wasn't unhappy with the money. He was unhappy with himself. One of the best treasures to take home from my words today. The greatest source of unhappiness is self-unhappiness. It's not unhappiness that comes from the outside. It's unhappiness that comes from the inside. That's the greatest source of unhappiness. And here's where it starts, like an infection so innocently. Doing a little less than you could and not feeling quite that good about yourself. That's where it starts, like an infection. And unless you pick up some disciplines to change that, I'm telling you, it could lead to the ultimate traitor, sell out, virtue, value. Judas said, I'm so unhappy, what'll I do? He said, oh, just take the money back. Took it back, and they said, heck with you, Judas. We don't want this money. We got what we wanted. You got what you wanted. And they threw him out. He said, what'll I do now? He said, oh, clever. Should have thought of this first. I'll just throw the money away. The story said he proceeded to throw his fortune away. Why would a man throw his fortune away? Because he was so unhappy with himself. Money doesn't mean anything if you've sold out, compromised your virtue and your principles and your values. Now Judas still can't erase what he's become, even though his fortune is gone. And the story said finally in desperation he went out and hung his worthless self. If he could speak back to us in any kind of clear language, here's what he might say. Beware. Two great words of antiquity. Here's the first one. Behold. That's the positive word. Behold. Can't you see? Behold. Take a look. Behold. That's the positive word. But here's the negative word of antiquity. What? Beware, beware, and here's one of the most important bewares of your lifetime. Beware of what you become in pursuit of what you want. Beware that you don't become too little by setting too small goals. And beware that you don't sell out your virtue and your value for something you think is valuable. Setting goals. Tied to personal development. Once Shelf unfolded this for me, I've never been the same since age 25. And if you'll go to work on this as seriously as I did, I'm telling you, you'll soon get hooked on the feeling, one, of personal development. Feeling of pride, feeling of self-worth, long before the results start returning from these early disciplines. I'm telling you, once you walk this road, you'll never walk another road. You'll never be influenced by anyone else's philosophy. You'll never be influenced. You'll pick up ideas and information. You'll pick up advice. But you'll learn to give yourself orders, develop your own philosophy that'll guide your life through all of the storms and all of the winds, you and your family, safely. You and your enterprise, safely. No matter who's elected, no matter what goes on. I want this seminar to be that valuable for you to develop this kind of strength. Okay, the last part of the seminar. If you're ready, say, I'm ready. All right. I got two major subjects to cover here to finish up with. Here's the first one. It's negative. Here's the second one. It's positive. Two subjects to finish up with. The first one's negative and the second one is positive. A good way to wrap up a seminar like this today. Some negative and some positive. Let me first now give you some tips on negative that really helped me. So valuable for me. I think you'll appreciate these. Here's number one. Negative is normal. Boy, that was helpful for me. No, it wasn't weird to be negative. Negative is normal. Normal meaning it's a part of the human experience. And it's a part of all of our experience. All of us have this same experience, the negative side of life. So negative is normal. Now, negative is not successful. Right. But it is normal, meaning it's a part of the life experience. Here's number two. Negative is not to be ignored. Negative is very real. As soon as you've planted the garden, the busy bugs and the noxious weeds are out to take it all. We have two things going for us in our human experience. Here's one, opportunity, and here's number two, the threat to the opportunity. So we deal with both of these twin scenarios in life, opportunity and the threat. Now, the threat to opportunity we call the negative side of life. Number one, it's normal, meaning it's a part of the life experience. Number two, it's not to be ignored. I know some people teach different, but listen to them and listen to me and make up your own mind. I know some people teach, just turn your head real quick and say, there's no weeds, there's no weeds, there's no weeds. Hey, they'll take your garden. Okay? So you can't play silly mind games. You say, well, then how can you have a good garden? Well, you got to kill weeds. So here's number three. Negative is to be mastered or conquered. That's part of the life experience. Now, this twin scenario of the life experience is unique. Negative, positive. In fact, we could probably get into quite a philosophical discussion if we wanted to. Would there be positive without negative? Here's the best I've been able to come up with. It doesn't seem like it. That's about the best I can come up with. Here's what it seems like. It seems like, based on our finite awareness now, since we're not infinite, we're finite, meaning creatures of the world, for the moment at least, that's about the best we can come up with. It seems like it takes both to make a unique human experience, both negative and positive. In fact, one suggests the other. Would there be life without death? It doesn't seem like it. What makes life valuable? Death. Somebody asked me once if I had a good description of life, and I said, yes, I think I do. Life is the struggle to keep death at a respectable distance. Death seems to want to move in prematurely, and get it. So to have a good, long, flourishing life, what do you have to do? Push back, push back, push back, push back. Now, if you don't push it back, it pushes you back. There's a push-shove going on here, and it's this negative-positive stuff. Would there be light without darkness? It doesn't seem like it. One suggests the other. Would there be success without failure? Well, I don't think so. You wouldn't call it success. You'd have to call it something else. It's the twin scenario that makes life interesting, fascinating, wondrous in its possibility, but also dangerous in part of the content. So this is the best I've been able to come up with. Negative is normal. It's not to be ignored, but it is to be conquered and mastered. But it is part of the experience. Don't deny yourself the opportunity to drink from both cups, negative, positive. That's the life experience. And hey, you wouldn't have it any other way. What if you went to listen to a symphony orchestra one evening and the symphony orchestra only played little happy high notes all evening? Just little happy high notes all evening, little happy high notes. How much of that could you take? A whole evening of little happy high notes? No, that doesn't represent life. Don't you want to hear the crash of the cymbals? The music that'll scare you to death, describing the tragedy as well as the triumph? The answer is yes, that's part of the life experience. Somebody says, well, I've been taught to be all positive. Well, you'll be some kind of freako then. We'll ship you off to la-la positive land. That's not a life experience. Come on. What if the minister only prayed happy prayers every Sunday? How much of that could you take? Happy, happy every Sunday, happy, happy every Sunday, happy. No. No. Who's going to pray angry prayers? Who's going to pray frustrated prayers? Who's going to weep in public for the lost children? Come on. Negative and positive. In fact, in one sweep of one sentence, ancient script says it best. There's a time to laugh. Of course. And once you've learned to laugh, just keep on laughing. No. There's a time what? To cry. And you've got to be so sophisticated and well-educated that you don't laugh when it's time to cry. Come on. Another writer said, rejoice with those that rejoice. But that's not the end of it. It also says what? Weep. Weep with those that weep. You don't laugh when somebody's weeping. You what? See, if you can't find and think of something to cry about when somebody's crying, you got to drink from both cups. Negative is part of the life experience. In fact, I teach kids that I teach kids the ant philosophy. I think part of it's in the new video. Teaching kids the ant philosophy. Here's a couple of pieces of the ant philosophy. Number one, ants never quit. What a great philosophy. If they're going somewhere and you stop them, I'm telling you, they'll look for another way. And how long will they look? Until they find it or die. What a great philosophy. Here's number two. Ants think winter all summer. Why do you suppose it looks like they're always in a hurry? You can't think summer all summer. We'll call you naive at the worst. An ancient story says, don't build your house on the sand in the summer. Why? It's easy to get faked out by blue sky and fleecy clouds. You can't get faked out by the summer, build your house on the sand. What a tragedy that would be, just to think summer all summer. You can't think summer in the summer. You got to think winter in the summer. You got to think negative when it's positive. You say, well, how can you think winter when it's a blue sky and fleecy clouds? You got to try. Or get somebody that's been through a winter and let them come scare you to death. Say, let me tell you about these winters that can come. Say, oh, no, I'm just going to sit here and think positive. We'll come get your children. Take them to safety. Here's what you got to do in the summer. Think enough about winter to find you a rock. To build your house on a rock. Why? The storms are going to come. You say, blue sky. No, you don't understand. You can't get faked out by blue sky. You've got to think negative when it's positive. One of the best scenarios I've got is the summer. On the weekend seminar, we'll get into it on that next seminar if you attend. The study of the seasons. The title of my first book was called The Seasons of Life. And I'll go through all four seasons with you in that seminar. But let me pick out one right now to illustrate my point. It's called The Season of Summer. Here's what's unique about the summer. You've got two challenges in the summer. Number one, to nourish your values. Number two, to fight the threat to your values. In the summer, you've got to nourish your good and fight your evil. You've got to nourish the garden and fight the weeds. Summer is a challenging time. In the summer, you must nourish like a mother. And you must destroy like a father. Love like a mother. Hate like a father. In the summer, give life like a mother to your values. And take life like a father. Take the life of your enemy. Let's say what? Take the life of your family. Father says to whatever threatens his family, take three more steps toward this family, you'll cease to exist. I'm father. I kill. In the summer, you've got to love like a mother and hate like a father. If you don't love and hate, I'm telling you, I pity your chances for the future. You say, well, I've been just taught to love. We'll send you off to love La La Land. You can't just love. Ancient script says to death what? Love good and what? Hate evil. Love good and hate evil. One of the greatest conversions of all time, the man said later after his conversion, the things I once hated, I now love. And the things I once loved, I now hate. Next seminar, we'll teach communications, how parents ought to put love and hate in the same sentence. You've got to put love and hate sometimes in the same sentence. I love you, you say to your child, but I hate what's happening. I love you, but I hate where you're going. I love you, but I hate what's going on. Love your friends and what? Hate your enemies. Now it is possible, yes, to love like a father and hate like a mother. Just so you get both done. Nothing more dangerous than an angry mother. especially in the animal kingdom. Beware, Mama Bear. If she thinks you're after her cubs, you'll cease to exist. She kills. You got to be like that. But that's the key. Both nourish and kill. Give life and take life. Love and hate. So important to understand this twin scenario of life. You got to be like your bloodstream. That's one of the best illustrations, your bloodstream. Red corpuscles to what? Nourish. And give food and give life. White corpuscles to what? Fight like a father and take life. Thank God for white corpuscles that think negative all day. White corpuscles say, just show me some infection, I'll kill it. Why? If I don't kill it, what? It kills you. You got to love and hate. You got to give life and take life. Tyranny takes over Kuwait in the form of Saddam Hussein. Tyranny's been doing that for the last 6,500 years every time it gets a chance. It takes over. Extinguishes the light of freedom and liberty. So what are we going to do? You say, well, it's just a little country. Well, what if Saddam now wants Saudi Arabia? You say, well, we're way over here. Well, then what if he wants Israel? I'm telling you, tyranny knows no restraint of appetite. And tyranny cannot be rehabilitated. It's got to be destroyed like an infection. It's been going on for 6,500 years, and didn't Hitler teach us well? Didn't Stalin teach us well? If tyranny knows no restraint of appetite, there's only one way to get rid of it. Let's kill it. So George Bush was right. Draw a line in the sand. Consult with the Allies. Send 500,000 troops to Saudi Arabia and finally to Kuwait and kick Saddam tyranny out of Kuwait. 6,500 years of history says you got to do it. You got no choice. Hired Chief White Corpuscle, General Schwarzkopf. Now, next piece. We all have enemies. You got to do your share of negative thinking. How to destroy your enemies. Ancient story said they returned to rebuild the walls of the temple in the city for their future. And as they built the walls of the temple in the city, they had a trowel in one hand and a sword in the other hand. The trowel was for what? To build their future. The sword was for what? Their enemies. I'm asking you to get just as good at the sword as you are at the trowel. So what are some of the enemies? Now here's the clue. Some of the enemies, let's talk about some of the enemies on the inside that you've got to take sword to and destroy them before they destroy you. Here's number one, indifference. What a tragic disease this is, indifference. Ho-hum, let it slide. Tragic. Take sword to this enemy. Here's one problem with drift. You can't drift to the top of the mountain. Next one, enemy of all of us, indecision. Indecision is called the thief of opportunity. Let it steal your chances for a better spring. Let it steal your chances for a fortune of the future. I'm telling you, tragic of immense proportion. Indecision? Take sword to this enemy, indecision. Next is doubt. Sure, there's room for healthy skepticism. You can't believe everything, but you can't let doubt then take over. Doubt the past and doubt the future and doubt each other and doubt the government and doubt the possibilities and doubt the opportunities and worst of all, doubt yourself. I'm telling you, it'll destroy your life and destroy your chances, empty your purse and your heart. Doubt is an enemy. Go after it. Next is worry. We've all got to worry some, but don't let worry conquer you. Let it alarm you. We've all got to be alarmed, but we don't want to be conquered. Worry is useful. 3 o'clock in the morning, your daughter's not home yet. You got to worry. New York City, step off the curb. One of those little taxis is coming. You got to worry. They don't stop like California. But now you can't let worry loose like a mad dog loose in the house, drive you into a small corner. Here's what you got to do with your worries. Drive them into a small corner. Whatever's out to get you, you got to get it. Whatever's pushing on you, you got to push back. Guess where illness is in your life right now? Testing the outer edges of your health plan, looking for a weak spot. And if illness can find a weak spot, it'll muscle in and take the territory. Unless you've got enough discipline and power to say, I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to fight illness like an enemy. I'll do enough push-ups to destroy illness. And if you don't do the push-ups and you don't get a book on nutrition and you don't take care of your good health, illness says, we'll soon have this clown. Do battle with your enemy. These opposites are in conflict and we're caught in the middle. Darkness and light, liberty and tyranny, illness and health, success and failure, death and life, good and evil. Next is overcaution, the timid approach to life. Timidity is not a virtue. It's an illness. And if you let it go and go and go, it'll conquer you. Leave you without a promotion. Timid people don't get promoted. They don't advance and grow and become powerful in the marketplace. Not timidity. And it is possible to conquer it. Don't let your illness conquer you. Don't let your shyness conquer you. Don't let your worries conquer you. They're your enemy. Take sword to your enemies. Drive them into as small and manageable a corner as you possibly can so that you can flourish in the rest of the house. The next one is pessimism. Pessimism is the enemy of us all. You've got to educate your own pessimism. Tendency to pessimism. To the pessimist, the glass is what? Half empty. But here's also what pessimism will try to get you to believe. It's only half empty. You've got to say, well, pessimism, that's ignorant. It's not only half empty, it's also what? Half full. Don't let your pessimism try to get you to believe something is only. It isn't only. Somebody says, well, I'm so positive, I only see it half full. Well, it's also half empty. Can't you handle that? That's going to ruin your day and ruin your future. Guys say, well, I don't let people talk negative around me. Well, my, we'll put you in some freaky colony. Come on, can't you handle a little negative talk? Can't you handle a little truth? Can't you handle a little tragedy around you? Yes, of course. Come on. Walk out of first grade, second grade. Don't let your life become shallow, saying, oh, no negative stuff around me. That's silly. Become mature. Become powerful. But then don't let pessimism trick you into saying it's only one way. It isn't only one way. It is also half full. But it's not only half full. It is half empty. Here's the last one, complaining. There's room for a legitimate complaint. But if you let this one loose, it'll conquer you. Complaining take over your life, destroy you, and leave you without anything. Nobody wants to take along a complainer. Nobody wants to promote a complainer. Nobody wants to live with one. Nobody wants to operate with one. Nobody wants to be a partner of one. Nobody wants to have one around. It'll ace you out of more opportunity than you can possibly imagine. Let this disease take over, grab you by the throat. If you don't think this one is bad, ask the children of Israel, of Old Testament fame. Typical of us all, their story just happened to get in the book. Story says, children of Israel were slaves. God performed a series of dazzling miracles and got them out. And now they're heading for the promised land. Remember the story? Heading for the promised land. Tragedy of the story. They never got there. Reason. From day one, they started to gripe. They griped about the food. They just got delivered from slavery, and now they're saying, his food's not all that hot. I mean, give us a break. How much can you take? They whined and cried and griped about the water. In the desert, they got water. But they say, this water doesn't taste that good. I mean, give us a break. They whined and cried and griped about the leadership that delivered them from slavery. Said, this leadership's not all that competent. I mean, give us a break. They whined and cried because it was too hot. It was too cold. It was too far. It was too difficult. It was too rocky. They whined and cried for years. Finally, God said, I've had it. Trip canceled. Or something like that. The story says they died in the desert, never got to the promised land after all that trouble. Which I guess means two things. One, indulge in this complaining long enough, you'll get your future canceled. Future promotions, future anything. Nobody wants to be around. And I guess the story also means even God himself can only take so much. Now, that's the negative side. Think negative when it's positive. Learn to hate evil. Love good. Hate tyranny. Love liberty. Learn to love health. Hate it, sickness. Now here's the last one. This is the positive side of the seminar. Got to get to the positive. Here's some emotions that can change your life in a single day. I call it the day that turns your life around. Let me just give you this list as we wrap up here today. Emotions that can change your life in a single day. Here's the first one, disgust. That's a powerful emotion, disgust. Disgust now is a negative emotion, but it can have a very positive effect. Disgust says, I've had it. What a glorious day that could be, the day you've had it. You say, I've been on my knees for the last time. What a glorious day that could be. Enough is enough. No more. Powerful day. Even if it's a negative day. I met a beautiful, sophisticated, superstar lady in New York. She worked for this jewelry company, very young. Vice president, made big money. This company brought me in to do some training, some seminars, classes. And I met this lady, extraordinary lady. Found out she never went to college, never went to university. I thought, whoa, how'd she get here? So I asked her a little bit about her story. I said, how'd you get here? No college, no university. This is tough New York. Vice president, big money, jewelry business. She said, well, let me tell you part of the story. She said, a few years ago, being a very young mother, she said, one day I asked my husband for $10. And he said, what for? She said, Mr. Owen, I promised myself before that day was finished, I would never, ever ask again. She said, I started looking for opportunity, found it. Started looking for the skills, the classes, found them. And she said, yes, now I am vice president. Jewelry company, I do make big money. It is tough New York. But that's one of the reasons why I got here. She said, I promise you, Mr. Owen, from that day until this, I have never, ever asked again. A powerful day. Here's the next one. Decision. What a powerful day that can be, decision making. If you went home today, and in the next few days, made a list of decisions that you ought to be making, make the easy one fast. Set up some time schedule to learn all that's necessary to learn, make the rest of the decisions. I'm telling you, it could be one of the glorious days of your life, the day you decide. Powerful. Next is desire. Wanting too bad enough. Who can explain how that works? I don't know. All I know is some have got it. Enough desire to last for a lifetime. But here's what I also know. Sometimes desire waits and sleeps, waiting for something to happen. And who knows what the happening may be. Maybe it's the next sermon. Somebody wakes up. Maybe it's the next seminar like this. Maybe it's a book. Maybe it's a song, the lyrics. Maybe it's a movie, the dialogue. Maybe it's a life experience. Maybe it's the conversation with a friend who finally levels with you. Maybe it's the confrontation from an enemy. Who knows what it might be? Suddenly, desires awaken that can last for a lifetime. Sometimes from the bitterest experience comes the greatest awakening. So here's the clue on desire. Welcome all life experiences. We get into more detail in this in the weekend seminar. Let life touch you. Don't let it kill you, but at least let it touch you. The next touch could open up the well. From shortly after the time I met my teacher, Mr. Shove, at age 25, no one's ever had to say to me all these years, when are you going to get going? Nobody's ever said that to me all these years. I've heard, when are you going to slow down? You're going to have a heart attack and die. You can't keep up this kind of calendar. But nobody's ever said to me, when are you going to get going? I'm asking you to keep searching for life experiences until you find one that lights your fires, until you will never lack for desire for the rest of your life. And nobody will ever have to say to you the rest of your life, when are you going to get off the couch? Clue. Welcome all experiences. Don't put up the walls. The same wall that keeps out disappointment keeps out happiness. Take the risk. And here's the last emotion that can change your life in a single day. It's called resolve. Resolve says, I will. Two of the most powerful words in the language. I gave you the formula for disaster. Could, should, don't. Here's the formula for fortune. Should, could, will. I will. I should. I can, and I will. Two of the most powerful words in the language, I will. Benjamin Disraeli once said, nothing can resist a human will that will stake even its existence on its purpose. I'll do it or die. What a powerful set of words. The man says, I will climb the mountain. They've told me it's too high, it's too far, it's too difficult, it's too rocky, it's never been done before. The man says, hey, it's my mountain, I'll climb it. Pretty soon you'll see me waving from the top or dead on the side because I ain't coming back. Power. The best definition of resolve I ever got was from a junior high girl, Foster City, California. I love to talk to kids and ask them definitions. They come up with beauty. I got to this word and I said to the kids, who can tell me what resolve means? Some didn't know and some tried. It was interesting. The best one I got was a little girl about 3 rows back. She said, Mr. Owen, I think I know. I said, what? She said, I think resolve means promising yourself you will never give up. I said, that's the best I've ever heard. You can't say it any better than that. Promise yourself you will never give up. You don't have to promise me. You don't have to promise the world. Just promise yourself. What a great bit of language. She's probably giving seminars somewhere today. That's powerful. I asked the kids, how long should a baby try to learn how to walk? How long would you give your average baby before he shut off? That's enough. No, any mother in the world would say, you're silly. My baby's going to keep trying what? Until. What a magic word, until. How many books will you read? Until you find the answer for your good health. Read one and quit. Read two and quit. Risk a cardiovascular disaster? I can't buy that from you. Wouldn't you read enough books until? Wouldn't you read enough books on financial independence until you become financially independent? Wouldn't you read enough books on leadership until you become a leader? Wouldn't you read enough books on power until you've got the power? Of course, why not? Don't settle for less. Use this little until phrase. I'll do enough exercises until I become healthy. I'm out of breath now, but I'll put myself through enough disciplines until I'm no longer out of breath. I'm not going to walk up one flight of stairs and can't catch my breath. It's over. Until. Magic. And now here's my four closing questions, and we're out of here. Four questions to ponder, I call these, for your notes, and then we're finished. What an exciting day this has been. Looking forward to coming back. I think right to this very room, right? Next time. If you can possibly get here, love to have you. Okay, just jot down these four questions now, and this wraps up our seminar. We'll get you on your way. Beat the traffic. Here's the first question. Why? One of life's most important questions. Why? Kids are always saying what? Why? Good question. What an extraordinary time sometimes to teach when someone says why. Don't leave a why go so empty without a substantive answer. Why learn that much? Why read that much? Why try that hard? Why not spend all the money when you're a child? You're only a child once. What? You've got to answer these whys. Why? You've got to come up with some whys. Here's what we teach in leadership. When the why gets powerful, the how gets easy. Why? If you come up with enough reasons, you can revolutionize your life. Short on reasons? I'm telling you, you're short on answers. If you get enough reasons, it'll drive you to find the books and find the answers and take the classes and set up the disciplines and do everything that's necessary. If you got enough reasons, that's what the why is. Reasons aplenty. Now, here's one of the best answers to why. Second question, why not? What else have you got to do while you're here? Why not see how far you can go, how many skills you can develop, how much money you can earn, how much you can share? Why not see how much enterprise you can get involved in, how many sales you can make, how many promotions you can get, how many friends you can make, how valuable you can become to your family? Why not see what all you can do and see all you can see and go wherever you can go and do all the things you can possibly do and live an extraordinary life? Why not? Hey, you've got to stay here till you go. I mean, what else are you going to do? Just hang on until the bitter end? Come on. Why not see it all? Why not have it all? Why not do it all? Why not engage as many things as you can possibly can to test all of your possibilities and all of your equities of life and heart and spirit and soul? Why not? Now here's one of the most important questions from me to you, individually, if I had a chance, but I have to do it collectively, but I want you to take this individually. I came from my house today and left my family to come spend time with you and your family today to ask you this most important question that's important to me, and here it is, number three. Why not you? I'm a farm boy from Idaho, raised in obscurity. I was broke at 25 and embarrassed in front of my family. My family knew about the creditor saying, "We're going to come get your car." What kind of a father's that? So how did I get here? I'm telling you, I'm asking you, why not you? If I can find this little book, Richest Man in Babylon, can't you find it? If I can read, can't you read? If I can change, can't you change? If I can set up some disciplines and save myself from disaster, can't you? And the answer is yes. Why not you? Does your blood run less hot than mine for ambition? I can't buy that. I'm smart and you're stupid? Can't buy it. I can understand it and you can't understand it? Can't buy it. I got the drive. You don't have the drive? Can't buy it. You wouldn't have been here today. Why not you? Farm boy from Idaho. That's what the American success stories are all about. I wish I had a bigger parade of stories on this platform to come across and tell their story and testimonial besides mine to encourage you, and they would all wind up their stories by saying, why not you? Mother on welfare, now rich beyond imagination, shouldn't she say, now why not you? I started ill, why not you? I started sick, why not you? I started behind and in debt, why not you? I was in despair, now I'm walking in the light, why not you? That's what the American dream stories are all about. Why not you? If one can do it, we all can do it. Wish I had more stories. One of the best I know of, dear friend of mine, Mark Hughes, A Verbal Life. Wow, what a story. My dear friend, Mark Hughes, was raised on the tough side of town in Los Angeles. Got involved with drugs when he was a kid. Managed to escape. Got so interested in helping other kids get off drugs, he became a fundraiser. Even as a kid, he became one of the best. As a teenager, he won all kinds of awards. He still gives a big share of his fortune to helping kids get off drugs. One of his clients back then, Ronald Reagan, who later becomes president of the country. That's a story in itself. This kid, Mark Hughes, never met his father until he was 20 years old. And when he met him, he didn't like him, unfortunately. Never met him again for 9 more years. I was in on after the second time. They decided to at least try to be friends. Now they're good friends. Tough way to grow up. Mark Hughes, the judge had to decide who he was to live with when he was a kid. Not the best of worlds. When he was 18 years old, his mother died from a drug overdose. Not something you want to tell around town. Mark Hughes never went to college, never went to university. He only went to the ninth grade in school, dropped out. But when his mother died, she was trying to lose some weight, lose a few pounds. And she got hooked on the diet drugs. And then she got hooked on the sleeping pills. And then she started seeing 2, 3, 4, 5 doctors, all behind their back to keep this monstrous habit going. And when she was 36, she's gone. When she died, Mark said, there's got to be a better way to lose a few pounds than to get hooked on the drugs. He said, I'm going to find a way. It's got to be a nutritional way, safe way. So he started studying nutrition. I met him 2, 3 years later, couldn't believe what he knew. This kid. And then he made a big discovery for himself, and that was herbs. He got so fascinated by herbs, he made trips to China as a kid. And finally put a little formula together called Herbal Life. His grandmother was his first customer. He said, Granny, you're fat. You've got to get on my new formula here. He's got a better presentation now, but I mean, that was it back then. She said, okay. And she lost some weight and got to feeling good and spread the word and got him some more customers. That started Herbal Life. He started really from the trunk of his car. And he just kept on going, got some other people to help him, did $1 billion in sales. Got so excited about what he accomplished, he did another $1 billion in sales. And then he just kept going, spreading into other countries, and he did another $1 billion in sales. And then he just said, hey, this works pretty good. And he just kept going, and he did another $1 billion in sales. That's what? $4 billion. And he does business in about 18, 20 countries officially, about 50 unofficially. Mega rich beyond anybody's imagination. He's still only 34 years old. Lives in a Beverly Hills mansion, got homes scattered around the world. If he was here to tell his story, guess what he would say? Why not you? Couldn't you find a fat grandmother? Borrow one from the neighborhood. Here's what he would also say. Take full responsibility. Maybe what's happened to you up until now has not been all your fault. But from now on, to solve it, it is your challenge. Take 100% responsibility. Work your way out of it. Mark attended my seminar about 16 years ago, and I recommended to him the little book called The Richest Man of Babylon. Guess what? He went and got it. I'm asking you, don't settle for less. Let the American dream stories inspire you. Start from scratch. Start from nothing. Start from debt. Start from despair. Start from the darkness. I don't care where you are. Ghetto. Mother on welfare. Book by book, you can walk away from anything. Class by class, you can walk away from anything. Apple by apple, you can be as healthy as you can possibly want to be. All you got to do is do not neglect. Pick up these disciplines step by step. Don't let any of them get away from you. Keep track of the numbers. And you can walk away out of the shadows into the light. Let your life become powerful and worthwhile and unique. Have all the equities you could possibly handle for a lifetime, for you and your family, and your treasures, and your enterprises. And I wish that for you. And here's my last comment in closing. If you'll allow me a personal word, here it is. Ask for God's help. That's just my personal word. I don't ask you to buy my philosophy, but we could all use a little help, I think. But hey, you've got to do your part. That's what this partnership is really all about. And that's what I've talked about all day today in this seminar, doing your part, my part. Remember the story about the man who took a rock pile and in a couple of years turned it into a beautiful garden? And a few years later, one man toured the garden, thought it was fabulous, but he wanted to make sure the gardener didn't take all the credit, so when he had a chance to meet him after the tour, he shook his hand and said, Mr. Gardener, you and the good Lord together have this beautiful garden here. Right? To get his point across. The gardener said, hey, I understand your point. If it wasn't for the seed and the soil and the miracle of the seasons and the sunshine and the rain, he said, certainly there wouldn't be any garden here. But he said, you know, you should have seen this place a few years ago when God had it all by himself. I like that part. And the reason is because we do have a part to play to help work our own miracle. And I hope that the things I've shared with you today have given you a little better insight into how to work these miracles for your own life. Goodbye. God bless. Thank you for being here today. Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you for listening to The Challenge to Succeed with Jim Rohn.
There's a Bible story that teaches the law of averages. It's an interesting story called The Parable of the Sower. The Parable of the Sower, the story of the sower. And if you haven't read it for a while, it's an interesting, very interesting story to read. It's a great illustration of the law of averages, the parable of the sower. The sower in the ancient days was the guy that planted the crops. They called him the sower, right? They got the ground ready. I don't know just how they all got it all ready, right? But they got the ground ready. And this guy called the sower was the planter of the crops. And he would take a bag of seed, walk across the field, and he would, right, sow the seed and plant the crops. They called him the sower. Now, the story of the sower is a typical story of life and people and results and what you can expect. Right? And then you let the obvious be your best teacher. Now, when you read the story of the sower, you'll come up with some interesting points. First, the sower was a wise man. And when you read the whole story, you'll come to the conclusion the sower was a wise man. Which is a high advantage. You don't want to send a dummy out to plant. Right? We will all starve come fall. Next point of the story was, the sower had excellent seed. Excellent seed. Story says he had the best. He didn't settle for something cheap and second best. Third point of the story, he was highly ambitious. And when you read the whole story, you'll come to the conclusion this man was ambitious, which is an admirable quality. Ambition. And then he went to work. Guy says, oh, I knew there was a hitch in there somewhere. That's where it is, probably, right? The guy goes to work. Now, the story with the sower, with the excellent seed, highly ambitious, opportunity all around him, he has the capacity, he's got the seed, everything's ready, and he starts out to sow to get some results. Now, it's an interesting story about what happened to him. It's a typical story of life, but it's fascinating. Here's what it says. He starts out to sow the seed early in the morning, but the first part of the seed that he sows falls by the wayside, and the birds get it. He's sowing this good seed, highly ambitious man, sowing this good seed, and the birds are grabbing it. He sows some more, and the birds grab that. He sows some more, and the birds grab that. Now, remember, this is a typical story of life and people. Now, is that fairly typical? See, I got to tell you as a leader, the birds are going to get some of the seed. You get a hold of John. Let's say you're in real estate, right? Somebody here is in real estate. You get a hold of John. John says, hey, I'm looking for a change. I need a new occupation change. And I've heard about real estate. You say, John, come on over Friday night. We're going to have this orientation class. And we'll show you how to do it. Might be the new life for you. Earn the money you want to earn. Get your life turned around. Who knows what will happen? John says, sounds great to me. I'll be there on Friday night. Learn all about it. I'll probably be one of your best salesmen. Say, okay, see you Friday night. Now, come Friday night, 7:30, supposed to start. John's not there. Say, well, maybe the traffic's a little heavy. So we wait till 7:45. About 8 o'clock, we come to the conclusion. What? He's not going to show. Question. What happened since this unique conversation that you had with John, and you dropped on him this great idea, you've got the explanation, helped change his life, he said he would agree to be there, and he's not there. What's probably happened between then and Friday night? The birds done got the boy. Got him. And who knows who the heck it might be, right? Maybe it's his brother-in-law, right? Says, real estate, you're not going to mix up in that, are you? Talked him out of it. Or his plumber. Says, let me tell you about real estate. His plumber. Now, if you get the message back as to what happened, see, here's where you might get off track. There's a couple of things you can do when the birds are grabbing the seed. One is you can chase birds. Sell dirty birds, and away you go after the birds. You say, wait till I get a hold of his brother-in-law. I'll straighten him out. Tear him a new page. What does he know about real estate? His plumber. Now, see, you're off trying to straighten things out rather than accepting it as it is. The best study of life is how it is, not how you wish it to be, not how you wish to rearrange it, how to take advantage of how it is. Some people would rather get even than to get ahead. They get off course. See, if you're off chasing birds, you have left the field. You're not sowing anymore. Now your chances go down instead of up. There's some things you don't try to cure. There's some things you ignore. Here's what it said this wise sower did. It said he ignored the birds, and he kept on sowing. How clever. There's some things you just got to accept. That's the way it is. So he keeps on sowing. And here's the key. If you keep sowing, you can sow more than the birds can get. But the birds are part of life. And don't press me why I didn't arrange all this. I don't know. It's just the way it is. So he keeps on sowing. Now the story says, this sower keeps on sowing. Now the seed falls on shallow ground, rocky ground, where the soil is shallow. And it says the little plant starts to grow. This time, the birds didn't get it. But the first hot day, these little plants wither and die. Now that's kind of disappointing, isn't it? But see, that's bound to happen. This time you recruit John. John says, I'll be one of your best. He doesn't show up at the third meeting. You say, where's John? Say, I don't know. Somebody said, boo. And he... When I went to high school, there were 400 and some in the... No. Yes, there were 400 and some in the freshman class. And 150 in the graduating class. Is that unusual? See, there's always more freshmen than seniors. What's that called? The law of averages. Life takes its inevitable toll. Everybody should stay and finish, right? Maybe they should, but they don't. And you've got to learn to take that into stride. See, otherwise you'll be bent out of shape, you'll be tipped over, you'll be frustrated, you will misread life, and you won't know what's happening. You've just got to understand, sometimes the seed falls on shallow ground. And it didn't say what to do about the shallow ground. It just said, that's the way it is. And we have a tendency to say, I thought sure John would last a month. But sure enough, it's happened. Now, you're going to be disappointed. Let me put this in here. When this doesn't work out, you know, just as you've planned, you're going to be disappointed. But here's what you must learn to do as a leader. Learn to discipline your disappointment. That's very important. Because sometimes it's easy to say, well, Pete, he's quit. John, he's quit. I guess I'll quit. And you just follow instead of lead. You're going to be disappointed. So be disappointed, but don't let it kill you. And don't let it stack up. Just understand, that's the way it is. I wish you would have stayed. But I wish him the best, wherever he's gone. He didn't last, but so what? That's life. Now then, here's what it said the wise sower did. He kept on sowing. How clever. Now it says the seed falls on thorny ground. This guy says, well, how much of this trouble can you have? Well, hang on, it's not the end of the story. Says, now the seed falls on thorny ground, and the little plant starts to grow, but then the thorns choke it to death. Now, is that fairly typical? See, the thorns are going to get some. The little Bible story called the thorns the cares of life. Little cares, little duties that cheat people out of big opportunities. And it happens every day. And I don't know what to do about it. I called John up and I said, John, where were you last night? We had a meeting. John says, well, I can't make every meeting. I say, why not? John says, well, I got a lot of other things I got to do. I say, what are they? You won't believe the list John gave me for last night. The backyard fence was sagging and the dogs were about to get out. You just can't let your dogs run loose. The screen door had come off the hinges. You just can't let things fall apart. You've got to take time to keep things fixed up. Some extra trash had piled up in the garage. You just can't let mountains of trash take over. You've got to take time and haul out this stuff. On the phone. I can hear the thorns getting. People letting little things cheat them out of big opportunities. Some people have the incredible ability to major in minor things. I drive through this little community. John's out there mowing his lawn. Cuts on the weeds, his face is red, and he's about to explode. I stop and I get out of the car. I say, John, what are you doing? He says, what does it look like I'm doing? I'm mowing this lousy lawn. I say, John, there's all kinds of little neighborhood boys around here. Mow your lawn. He says, well, they want $5. I'll mow it myself. I'll mow it myself. Number one, there should be a law against cheating some little neighborhood boy out of $5. That should be a law. But see, the biggest cheat is letting little things cheat you out of major opportunities, called the thorns, the cares. But now what do you do about that? Well, see, I used to give classes on how not to let the thorns see, but that won't work. I mean, those classes won't help. Here's what it said this wise man did. He kept on sowing. How clever. He understood the law of averages. Keep sowing. Good people are not trained, they're found. You don't need much training, right, with good people. Find good people. Now, it says, finally, the seed falls on good ground. That's what it says, good. Somebody says, how do you find the good ground? Answer, keep looking. You'll recognize it when it comes by. You won't have to make something bad into something good. You'll recognize good when it comes by. Now, even the good ground, the story says, part of the good ground produced 30%, part of it produced 60%, and part of it produced 100%. Even the good ground. What's that called? The law of averages. The ratios. Where do they work? Everywhere. Who for? Everybody. Now, what you must do is understand the ratios as a leader so that you learn how to work with them and not against them.